Good afternoon to those of you that are the persistent folks that are wanting to know about compost. So compost is kind of an interesting beast because plant scientists work on plants, soil scientists work on soil, and compost kind of represents this middle ground where you're taking the remains of plants and you're hoping to put them in soil and grow new plants. So I would have to say if you look at different disciplines, you can probably find more interesting things within the world of compost than most other universes because of the diversity of perspectives that you get. So I'm going to talk first about some field studies where we tried compost in the context of an integrated systems trial, and that was done in cooperation with our previous speakers, Dave and Bernadine. And then I'll talk about some work that we did to try and look at what are the characteristics of an ideal compost for blueberry, keeping in mind its peculiar habit of wanting to have high ammonium, low pH, and low salt. Okay, so what's the impetus for this work? Primarily, it's the magic of organic matter for blueberries. Probably unlike any other crop I've ever looked at, when you look at the literature, you see a lot of studies where they have an organic matter treatment. Often that organic matter treatment isn't very well characterized as far as the chemistry goes, but oftentimes blueberry plants will respond positively to organic matter. And as you know, if you study organic matter, you're talking about a range of things that it does, and you can't measure them all simultaneously, so you have a little bit of magic going on there. So in the Northwest, sawdust was kind of the standard mulch for many years. Two changes. One, sawdust prices went up, and blueberries began to be grown organically. So the organic nitrogen costs about 10 times more per pound than the conventional nitrogen. So the organic growers are interested in whether they can use less sawdust and in that way use less nitrogen fertilizer. That's another driver. So here's a contrast between the sawdust and the yard debris compost that was used in the field trial I'm going to talk about. The yard debris compost comes from the grinding of shrubs and tree parts and grasses and whatever goes in those toters in the urban areas. Those are hauled to a centralized composting facility. They have large windrow composting generally. The compost is hot for usually 6 weeks, and then it has a curing period that's usually about 6 months. So what you get from this kind of compost feedstock is you get something that looks kind of like soil organic matter. You get carbon-nitrogen ratios approaching that of soil organic matter. Soil organic matter might be 12 to 15, something like that. This yard debris compost has a C/N of 21. And you get higher nutrients of all kinds than were present in the sawdust. As far as price goes, at the time we started the work, it was maybe 1 1/3 times as expensive per unit of volume. All right, so this trial has three different mulch treatments. It has a treatment with the compost that the compost is applied to the beds, and then the sawdust is applied over the top of the compost. So we have sort of a compost sawdust sandwich, if you would. And that's being compared to weed mat and to sawdust alone. So if you look at this particular photo, you can, if you look at the right side there, you can see that there's some darker looking sawdust. Well, that is the sandwich with the compost underneath. What happens over time is that the compost tends to work its way to the top, and that is not a positive thing because you get weeds that are stimulated by more nutrients in compost, better water holding capacity. So that's the downside of the yard debris compost. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about nutrients. So I'll be showing three or four slides like this where these all come from that systems trial in the field, and I'm just looking at the mulch treatments within that trial and my three treatments, the compost plus sawdust. The one we're talking about specifically today is the dark blue bar, and you'll see that compost was a successful treatment as far as consistently keeping the organic matter level in the soil higher. So this is the soil underneath the mulch layer after the compost and the sawdust are scraped off. So somehow compost makes its way from the surface, and we actually measure a higher organic matter under the mulch. So it's a difference of about 1% greater organic matter with the compost treatment. And you can see it's fairly consistent over time. How did this affect pH? Well, in this particular trial, we didn't apply a huge amount of compost, and it's applied as a mulch. And the mulch, as we'll talk about later, is relatively low in pH buffering capacity. So we didn't have a huge effect on the pH. So I think that's part of the reason why this treatment could be beneficial, is that the first thing we have to do is to make sure we're not raising the pH above that which blueberries want to be grown at. I'm going to be talking a little bit about potassium and how it might be a negative factor associated with compost. Basically, in plants, leaves have high nitrogen and high potassium. So if you have a compost that supplies nitrogen, you're going to be bringing along potassium with it. And you can see in these soil tests from the field trial, we consistently have higher levels of potassium with the compost treatment. So kind of for those that aren't thinking in centimoles of positive charge per kilogram, one centimole of charge is about 390 parts per million of potassium, a relatively high soil test value. Okay, so now I'm going to break off from the field trial and talk about trying to chase the aspects of the compost that give us the positive and negative effects. And because this research is kind of basically kind of trying to follow the Hippocratic Oath for compost use, above all, do no harm. We're kind of looking at how far we can go in supplying nitrogen, supplying some other nutrients, supplying organic matter without causing problems for blueberries. So the cards that were dealt with composting is that basically what we're trying to do with composting is take something like manure and mix it with something like a woody material and come up with a material that has a more moderate carbon-nitrogen ratio. So what I'm going to be showing you is we're looking at these compost, our compost that kind of fall into this range of carbon-nitrogen ratios from 12 to approximately 25. So that's going to work out to a compost that has between 1 and 2% nitrogen. And you'll see, depending on the feedstocks, when we achieve that, we achieve either marginal pH and marginal EC, or really high pH and really high EC. So here's some of the different materials that we work with over time. All of the pHs are above 7. Some of the ECs are pretty high. This is with the saturated extract method. And you can compare the numbers for the compost relative to soil amendments that are known to be beneficial for blueberries, like sphagnum peat or sawdust, and see what you're doing with the compost. You're bringing a lot of basically lime equivalent and salts along with the organic matter. So to try and get a handle on how to quantify how much sulfur would be required to drop the pH to compensate for the compost, we had to take a look at something called the buffering capacity of the compost as far as pH is concerned. So we developed a procedure to do a quick titration procedure. Each cup in the picture has a different amount of acid. So we're looking at the change in compost pH with the change in acid addition. And when we do that, we typically get a linear kind of a function. So if our target pH in this case was 5, we can find the point on the curve where we get to 5, and it takes about 0.7 moles of hydrogen ions per kilogram to get to that point. So the buffering capacity is actually the inverse of the slope of this line. So what that means is that the steeper the line is when it's drawn this way, the lower the buffering capacity. And I'll illustrate that here. So here we have a dairy compost versus the yard debris compost. The yard debris compost has the steeper slope, less buffering capacity, less acid required to get to the desired acidic pH for blueberry. Numbers to translate, one mole of hydrogen ions per kilogram is the same as a 16 grams of elemental sulfur, assuming that all of the sulfur reacts to give you hydrogen ions. So how much variability is there? There is a lot of variability in compost. So I'll emphasize this at the end, but while I'm here, don't assume that because you have yard debris compost or because you have dairy compost that there's a number you can look at in a table and that'll tell you what to do. These composts need to be analyzed, and they need to be analyzed in a way that you can interpret. So that's a whole nother probably workshop, but keep in mind here that you've got variability. And the way this is drawn, the center line in each bar, that's the median amount of acidification you need to get to pH 5. So basically, we don't consider dairy to be a viable situation for blueberry because we start off with a lot of salt, and every unit of sulfur we adds more salt. So one of our conclusions is that dairy is not a, generally speaking, at this time, it's not a suitable feedstock. So I'm going to show you some numbers where I added up the charges using a total analysis of compost. And strictly speaking, that's heresy because total doesn't have charge, but I did this so that the potassium, calcium, and magnesium can be added to get can be added together to give an overall number. And so what we find there is that the same sort of thing, but now we're accounting for all of the cations in the compost. Note here that from this table, it looks like there's a lot of uniformity, that everything has either 1.4 moles of charge per kilogram or 2.5 or so. Again, I want to dissuade you that uniformity occurs because this is the real situation. When you actually look at them compost by compost, what you see, though, is there is a rough relationship between the sum of calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, and the amount of sulfur needed to acidify the compost. All right, so graduate student Ryan Costello worked with a project where he took lots of different composts, potted them up with a soil, and grew them for one growing season to look at the short-term effects of these composts on root and shoot development. To get the compost ready for the experiment, Ryan used those numbers we developed for the buffering capacity and applied the appropriate amount of sulfur to the compost, and he found that he was trying to get it a two-unit pH drop, and he was pretty successful at that. He, on average, was able to decrease the pH from 7 to 5, and along with that, the EC approximately doubled. The number one effect of the of all the compost analyses there were, the best correlation with the plant response was the pH of the compost, either the initial compost or the compost after it had been acidified. I want to emphasize here that normally an R-squared of 0.28 is not considered to be a highly significant result. However, remember that you have many, many independent variables within a single compost treatment. So to be able to say anything about it, pH is the strongest, followed by the EC has a similar relationship that I won't show, but it's negative. So one of the interesting things we found out by analyzing the compost after acidification is what the ions were that were solubilized during the acidification process. So what we found was that mainly were dissolving calcium and magnesium, and so the acidified compost has on a ratio basis, it has a lot more magnesium to potassium than the starting compost did. So in one of the trials, we were successful at killing a few plants, and we thought that the plant death looked a lot like a magnesium deficiency. And the relationship between the compost analyses and the leaf magnesium levels suggested that could be the case. So here we're showing the potassium in the starting compost versus the leaves of blueberry plants 50 days after transplanting into the soil compost mix. And what we see is that we get higher leaf magnesium after compost acidification. So as far as a scaling up activity, we looked at how are we really going to acidify compost, because we can do it in the lab with a wettable sulfur compost, but generally growers are going to use some form of pelleted material. So we looked at this in terms of a kind of a microplot experiment, a buried bag experiment, where you take compost, you mix it with the sulfur, put the bag back into the compost pile, let it incubate, and then see what the pH is after incubation. So we're in a hot pile in this particular example, and what you can see is that granular sulfur did not work very well in acidifying compost. We got hardly any effect of granular, and we got a large effect within a couple weeks from the finely ground sulfur. So as far as conclusions go, I'm fairly confident that we have one winner, that we have pretty consistent quality of these woody composts that are produced by our yard debris compost facilities. Those facilities are big enough that variations in what comes into the facility are kind of homogenized in the composting process. Those facilities typically have a full compost analysis that is done by a quality lab. We know that we can acidify compost, and if the material is finely ground sulfur, it happens quickly. We know how much to put on there because we now have this pH buffering capacity test that takes 3 days in the lab to predict how much sulfur we need, or we have a ballpark number if you're wanting to use that. Want to point out that if we're not talking about blueberries and you actually want lime, you could use the same test to figure out what is the liming value of different composting materials. As far as grower recommendations, I would generally have no problem recommending yard debris compost from our Western Washington, Western Oregon sources. These are predominantly coming from coniferous vegetation like Douglas fir trees, lots of rhododendrons, conifers. So these are generally acidic kinds of, relatively speaking, vegetation. I don't want this recommendation expanded to include eucalyptus in Australia or places that have a dominant calcareous soil. Those composts are much more likely to have a higher pH buffering capacity and to contain free lime. So generally speaking, we can supply organic matter, but the compost that is compatible with blueberries is not going to supply a lot of nitrogen. So what we're going to get primarily is a reduction in immobilization from the sawdust, but we're not going to replace fertilizer with the yard debris compost that we think is okay. We recommend that growers first check with somebody that knows how to interpret a compost analysis, then pick a lab that does a good analysis, and then use the compost at modest rates on a trial basis. All of this is pretty early on, and blueberries are a mighty expensive crop, and it's really hard to pick up compost, so I recommend caution. One thing we've discovered shown is that potassium might be an issue. I showed you that field trial, and it didn't seem to be an issue as far as plant production in that trial. Actually, we got a slight yield increase, even though our potassium in the soil is about doubled. But if you continue to do this over time because you're applying more potassium than plants are taking up, there might be a problem down the road. As far as the numbers that might be used to look at compost analyses and decide, you know, have I got a compost that has potential for blueberries? Again, my philosophy, these are my numbers. I'm trying to limit phone calls that say, I just use compost and plants are looking like they have, they're burning up because they have too much salt. We don't want that, so these are fairly conservative on salts. for pH, it doesn't matter how the compost is analyzed. We get the same numbers, whether it's a saturated extract or there's a 1 to 5 or a 1 to 10 compost to water method. Doesn't matter, you'll get the same pH approximately. However, for EC, it makes a huge difference. So if you're using saturated extract, I would recommend not going over a conductivity of 4. If you're doing the 1 to 10 method, which is actually much easier to do with compost because you can actually get water out of your compost sample to measure the EC, it would be approximately 1 to 1.5 would be the same as 4 with SME. So we know how to measure the buffering capacity and estimate sulfur requirements. The more sulfur we need, the more salt we get. And since we don't want salt, that's part of the problem with things that have lots of nitrogen, have lots of salt, and they need lots of sulfur to acidify them. And then potassium, this one has the least basis in research to test the level, but just as a rule of thumb, our yard debris composts have a level of about 1%, and that appears to be not causing a problem in our trial. So with that, I think I'm done, and I welcome any questions there might be. Or how are we doing on time? Okay, well,
I have one.
Yes.
Sulfur pellets to the dairy solids. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty impressive. And you reduced the pH to 5.5. Now, he says the biggest problem with compost and blueberries is the high pH.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you lowered the pH.
Yeah.
Would you then be able to use that compost and blueberries?
Okay, so the question is, we had a slide of a windrow, added sulfur dust, dropped the pH. It was a dairy compost. Dave wants to know if that is a good compost for blueberries. The answer is this will be an excellent compost if you wish to have a lot of salt problems with your blueberries. The EC of this kind of a compost is going to be probably around 12, so it'll be very high. So no, this would not be an excellent. So that slide is probably the kind of compost is not so important. What's important there is the rate of reaction of the sulfur.